welcome everybody back to deadpit.com. I'm Uncle Bill, and he is...
the creepy Kentuckian, if you will.
And today, we're going to discuss a lot of the current horror news topics and talk about last week's Friday the 13th show. And
that's right. Seems like it's been a long time since last week.
It does. The first topic to discuss
as we mentioned 2 weeks ago, the next regular show, because we didn't want to pollute the Friday the 13th show with this bullshit, was the Eli Roth Hostel, review. It's been 2 weeks since we've seen it, pretty much. But
it's still fresh in my mind. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it's... I'm not surprised by Hostel when we saw it. It was along the lines of what I thought it would be, honestly. And
well, let's just take this time just to say before we go on that when we saw Cabin Fever, which was Eli Roth's first movie, that we basically came out of there with the vision that it couldn't get much worse than that movie for him. Yeah. So I am actually a little bit surprised because I didn't really think he could top the shittiness of the Cabin Fever epic.
The one thing, yeah, I will give you that I sort of felt, because Rob Zombie proved me wrong with Devil's Rejects, I had it in my mind that maybe Eli Roth would redeem himself with Hostel, even though I thought Devil's Rejects looked like it was going to be shitty too. So, I went in thinking maybe I would be surprised, but, I wasn't.
I'll give you the basic premise of the film. Not that anybody should care, and by, don't go see this movie. I'm serious. But the basic premise of the movie is there's two college graduates. They go on
a Euro trip.
Euro trip, yeah. And they go to Amsterdam. And along the way, they pick up some kind of Icelandic dude in Paris or something like that. So they're checking into all these brothels, and they're going to all these smokehouses to smoke weed and everything.
They want to find some good hookers.
Yeah, it's basically about finding, hookers and drugs or whatever. And this kid comes along and tells them that they want to find the best, hostel, which is a place where it's like a hotel. They need to go to Slovakia. So they go on a train ride to Slovakia, and then in the middle of it, they meet this guy who they meet again. And what ends up happening is basically they get drugged at this hostel, and they take into like a torture chamber, and then Eli Roth just, has these grandiose scenes of torture where he tries to rip off every, Texas Chainsaw Massacre and, maniac movie that there, ever been made.
And Saw, too, by the way.
Yeah, Saw.
It's really basically bad. Saw with more gore. But a few redeeming qualities about the movie, but that doesn't still, excuse it from being a complete piece of shit. It's got a lot of titties on it, in it.
One more titty.
And it's got some really great gore scenes from KMB. And only a complete moron like Eli Roth could ruin that. So.
But he certainly does.
Yeah, he did ruin it.
He did a wonderful job of taking what would be a really great idea for like a splatter picture. But that's the problem, okay? You can't do splatter pictures anymore. The MPA won't let you do that kind of stuff. So what he basically did was the same thing he did with Cabin Fever, where he takes a premise that would really be a good idea if you could do it, and then he just makes it completely boring and just...
The same way as Cabin Fever, it completely didn't make sense. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're watching... It's basically like watching paint dry. It's you don't get anything out of the movie, okay? And as much as I love horror movies, I watch horror movies because they're fun. Okay, this movie wasn't fun to watch. It was along the lines of Cabin Fever in that it gave me a headache watching it because, Roth's complete lack of directing and telling any kind of a story will just make you... It gave me a headache, flat out. So, Hostel sucks, flat out. That movie fucking... there's no excuse for movies like that to be made today, okay? And I would say there's 70% of the people out there probably, they like Hostel. And I would love for people to email me and tell me why exactly you liked it. I mean, I've had people tell me on message boards and threads and things, the gore and stuff like that. And I love gore, and Uncle Bill loves gore. I love titties, and I'm sure Uncle Bill likes titties too.
I'm a fan of titties.
Yeah. All the titties in the world, though, aren't going to make up for the fact that Eli Roth just sucks ass.
Yeah, that's the real bottom line. If you want a bottom line about this,
there are people out there, and the same people that gave Hostel 70% positive rating that believes the hype. Okay, and that's the people that like that fucking movie. Quentin Tarantino's name is involved in it. It's got to be great. No, it's a piece of shit. Let's go on. All
right. Onward from that.
We go in this week in the horror. Okay, the horror news. I've got Masters of Horror related news for season 2.
Masters of Horror being the Showtime series.
Yeah, the acclaimed series from Showtime.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the directors from the original season are set to return in season 2, such as John Landis, Stuart Gordon, Joe Dante, your favorite Toby Hooper,
mm-hmm.
John Carpenter, and exec producer Mick Garris are all going to return. Now, new directors are Session 9's Brad Anderson, Guillermo del Toro, who did Hellboy,
Devil's Backbone, Hellboy.
And Rob Zombie are all scheduled to be the new Masters of Horror for the next season. And Clive Barker is supposedly writing an original screenplay that series.
And in related news to that, if any of y'all are a fan of Japanese horror, and I hope you're not, but if you are, then Takashi, I guess you pronounce his last name Mike. Or...
No, it's Takashi McKay. That was...
Okay.
I actually looked that up because I didn't know either.
Okay, yeah. Well then Takashi
I've got that on here too, but you can go ahead.
He had an episode and I believe the name of it was... Oh Lord, what was it?
Imprint.
For some reason, I can't believe this especially after seeing Dario Argento's Jennifer episode, that it got dropped for content. He wouldn't cut down the content, and Showtime completely dropped the episode.
Yep.
It's pay cable, folks. What in the hell? Why would you drop an episode for content?
I don't know, but I want to find out.
Yeah. And that should be released on DVD soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, Anchor Bay is set to release that episode from what I've read, and actually series creator Mick Garris said that the film he made called Imprint is even more intense than his other film, Audition. That's saying something right there. So the first season of Masters of Horror, we're on Masters of Horror News. This is all this is, by the way. Anchor Bay is set to release the entire series about very slowly, though. John Carpenter's Cigarette Burns and Stuart Gordon's Dreams in the Witch House are scheduled to be released on March 28th. By themselves, by the way. One episode is six. It's going to cost you $16.98 each. Okay. Then two separate episodes are going to be released monthly, all with the retail price of $16.98. And that's $16.98 per episode. We're a fan of Anchor Bay and everything, but seriously, that's just milking the fucking cow dry. If you wanted to buy the entire, I think it's 13 episodes, maybe 12, I calculated it up, it will be $203.76 if you want to buy that whole series.
If you wanted to buy each single DVD,
yeah.
Well, hopefully to God they'll come out with a box set that won't be that much.
Yeah, the box set, I'm guessing, will be out around Christmas time next year, or end of this year, which will be about 11 months from now.
I'd just take it off the Showtime, seriously, right now.
Yeah, I mean, get you a DVD recorder and record it like I do. There's a new movie coming out, though. I don't know if you've heard about it. Tamara, have you heard about that?
I haven't heard about that one.
City Lights Media will present the theatrical release of Tamara on February 3rd. After a teenage prank on the unpopular girl in school, Tamara goes horribly wrong. The pranksters decide to cover their track and bury the body. However, death will not keep Tamara down, as she is a witch. Returning from the grave with a new seductive look and motive for revenge to match, Tamara hunts down and kills all those involved in her death. So it sounds like a mix between, any vampire movie and Ginger Snap, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I also actually seen a picture of Jenna Dewan, who plays Tamara. Yeah! That's all I can say.
Who's directing that? Do you have the director on it?
No, I think he's a fairly new director, though. I don't have his name down here. But
I haven't heard anything about that movie yet.
Yeah.
I've got some fascinating new Uwe Boll news, though, to pass on.
More video game movies.
Close. Actually, it was confirmed about a week ago that he was going to start Metal Gear Solid.
I've got that down here. Yeah.
Metal Gear Solid. But as recently as just a couple hours ago on the newswire, it says that, unfortunately for all you fans of Uwe Boll's video game movies, he's going to take a break from video game movies and direct the upcoming Seed, which is an original concept based on a screenplay of his own.
What?
Yeah. Now, I don't know.
I didn't think he could write.
I wasn't aware that he could either, but apparently he's actually going to produce, direct, and he wrote the script.
He's just a man of many talents.
This is a dark day for horror movies when Uwe Boll takes a break from video games. Who are we going to get to do CGI-riddled video game movies now?
Paul Anderson.
You're right. Paul Anderson, you're going to be in business for a long time.
He's doing it, folks. He's doing it. Paul Anderson, he'll never not make a non-video game film. I guarantee you that.
He won't sell out. I'm ashamed of him.
I got some news on another remake, by the way.
Which one? Because I've got some too.
The Black Christmas remake.
Oh, yeah. The cast list.
It's actually one of your favorites. The girl that stars in it was in one of your favorite movies, Harriet the Spy.
Oh, yeah.
Michelle Trachtenberg. She's set to star in the 2929 Productions and Dimension Films remake of Bob Clark's classic 1974 film, Black Christmas. And also the creators of Trick and Treat and Final Destination, James Wong and Glenn Morgan.
Glenn Morgan and James Wong, by the way, were the executive producers on the X-Files before they started.
Who cares about the X-Files? Trick or Treat's better than that shit.
Well, yeah, Trick or Treat was awesome.
Yeah. It had the Fastway soundtrack. You gotta love that. Mm-hmm. Black Christmas is about a killer who terrorizes a sorority house and phone calls before he begins to murder various sorority sisters during the holiday break. The film will start shooting at the end of the month in Vancouver and is slated for a Christmas 2006 release.
If anybody ever wonders, by the way, why all these movies, not just horror movies, but movies in general, were shot in Vancouver, I'll give you a real short answer to that question. It's cheaper, okay?
Yeah, a lot of them. Seems like pretty much all the Friday the 13th movies from Part 8 on have been in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
But Glenn Morgan will be writing and directing that film, too. So
here, the remake I was talking about, and I just found out about this today, and I'm not sure this movie was ever either popular enough or not popular enough to make a remake of. But anyway, they're making a remake of Joe Dante's Piranha.
I actually did hear about that.
Which is a Roger Corman produced movie. I'm not sure why you would. That's kind of like remaking Jaws, except worse. But I don't know why you would even try that unless you just want to see CGI Piranha.
It's not going to be CG, man. They're going to have real piranhas in there.
But off the wire, Dimension Films will distribute Piranha, the remake of the 1978 horror hit in the U.S. and all English-speaking territories. Chuck Russell is in negotiations to direct from a script he wrote adapting the original movie.
There's a cool figure out that's actually, I think it's on our message board. Somebody posted it. A Dawn of the Dead figure of the Flyboy himself is going to be released by NECA. I think it's going to be released in April. I'm not positive.
Flyboy figure, I saw pictures of it.
That's actually
freaking
awesome. Yeah.
If you want, hold on a second. If you want to see this figure, go to HTTP, NECA Online, that's NECAonline.com/cultnews, and you can see the figure.
It's a cool figure, by the way. Mm-hmm. NECA does make, like, a lot of junk, but that figure does, it is freaking cool. See No Evil, the official website, is at seenoevil.com. And the trailer did debut in front of Hostel, and we saw it, folks. And I'm telling you, raise some Cain.
Oh, yeah. There's a...
You know, I wanted to get off on something here, though. We were watching the trailers. There are many trailers in front of Hostel, so...
Most of them remakes.
I wanted to get on the subject really quick because I know we've got a pretty packed show here. We've got an interview, we've got discussions on magazines and everything else. PG-13 horror movie, okay? When a Stranger Calls. That was another one. Let me tell you something, buddy. The original When a Stranger Calls sucked. The first 15 minutes was good, right? what the fuck? All this is a Scream ripoff. All this new one is. I mean, and it's PG fucking 13.
Well, actually, you got like
you got to be kidding me. I'm sick of this shit.
Three different degrees that are going. First of all, When a Stranger Calls was actually the predecessor to Scream.
I know, but what I'm saying is...
I know, but it's ripping off like at least two different concepts. And plus the fact that you're right, PG-13 movies, the ones that I've seen, and that's been like, I think, what was it? Was Cry Wolf PG-13?
Yep.
And I think Red Eye was, and The Fog. And all those movies that I've seen like that were just the god-awful movies. There's no sense in it. There's no sense of even having a PG-13 rated horror movie at all.
What audience are you going for with PG-13 horror film?
Well, that's just my basic argument with, like, horror films in general. What audience are they making these movies for?
That movie looked like complete garbage, and I'll never see it. I guarantee I'll never see it. And to be honest with you, I've never watched When a Stranger Calls all the way through. You just watch the first 15 fucking minutes of the movie, and that's the best goddamn part.
I'm a big fan of Carol Kane, though, so.
Well, Carol Kane was hot back then. Yeah, all right, let's go on with this shit. The See No Evil, Gregory Dark, okay? This is the guy we talked about a couple weeks ago.
That's the man.
I'm putting all my faith in old Gregory because, you know, I think See No Evil is going to be, you know, fucking killer. So let's go. What else you got?
I got some
Uncle Bill.
If anybody's a fan of Full Moon Entertainment, and I know that there are quite a few fans, they got two new box sets out. They've had one that's been out for a little while that we haven't talked about yet. They had the Puppet Master box set, and they got the Subspecies box set coming out.
Right.
And it's released in Australia, but it's actually all regions, so you can play it anywhere in the world.
Yeah, and actually the Puppet Master box that he mentioned is limited release. I don't even know if it's still available because they had some sort of legal dispute like 3 or 4 years ago, and they had to, you know, take all of them up from stores, and they were in a warehouse. There were only 100 of them left, I think, but there might be still some available.
But if you want any information about the box sets, go to www.fullmoondirect.com, and you can find out about Subspecies and the Puppet Master box sets.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with some more news on The Rage, Fangoria, The Fog Remake, and Satan's Playground on Dead Pit.
For 20 years, the secret of the spheres has remained a mystery.
The final game now begins.
The sci-fi horror thriller with balls. Phantasm IV.
Alright, we're back here on deadpit.com. And the next thing I want to talk about in the news section is back to Hostel.
Oh, Lord.
As if...
I don't want to waste more time on
Well, it's in the news.
Okay.
So we're going to have to. As if the first Hostel wasn't enough. In much the same vein as Saw and Saw 2 were rushed together to make sequels, Hostel 2 is already being made.
Well, the one positive I can look about that, maybe if they make Hostel 2, he'll forget about that Bad Seed remake.
He's got to subject us to the Bad Seed remake because he's on a roll right now. I mean, he's made.
I hope he falls in a hole. I hate Eli Roth. I can't talk about him enough.
Yeah, we really can't talk about how bad he is.
I got some news for you though. This you might want to hear. A movie I'm actually looking forward to: The Rage. The website is theragefilm.com, and it should actually be up by the time you hear this.
That's Robert Kurtzman's
name. Yeah, that's... And if you want to see a really great poster, check it out on the deadpit.com's message board. It's titty-rific.
And if you don't know who Robert Kurtzman is, you first of all need to take some horror lessons.
You'd go to horror school Uncle Bill.
Need to come to the horror house, but... If you don't know who he is, he started off doing makeup effects, and he did makeup effects for tons of, like, favorite movies, and one of my favorite movies, Night of the Creeps, he actually did makeup effects.
Yeah, they did makeup effects for tons of great movies, Phantasm 2, Evil Dead 2.
In K&B Effects, he's actually the K in K&B Effects. Right. It's Kirkman, Nicotero, and Berger. So. And he also directed Wishmaster, and I think the sequel as well. So
no, he didn't.
He didn't direct the sequel?
Jack Shoulder directed the sequel, Wishmaster 2. I don't know who did the other pieces of shit. But
anyway, yeah.
Robert Kurtzman's killer. Flat out. And they did, like, all those the Army of Darkness and Evil Dead 2, and a lot of the Tarantino movies they did. I don't know, they're killer. We love K&B, but y'all know that. Some Fangoria news. Their favorite magazine. Fangoria staff wants to let readers know that they will no longer be able to pick up their monthly Fix of Fear at Suncoast Video Stores. The company is undergoing a Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Wonder why.
I can't imagine.
As a result of not selling Fango at this point in life, the magazine can still be found pretty much everywhere else. Flat out, just say that. Now, we're going to get into Fangoria a little later. I want to talk a little bit about Suncoast.
Oh, God. Do we have to?
I want to because I'm just glad to know that they're filing for bankruptcy. That store sucks.
Yeah, if you ever want a DVD and you want to pay like $10, $15 more than you
would
anywhere
else. You want to pay $29.99 for a goddamn DVD, go to Suncoast. Yeah. How does a store like that stay
in
business?
It's in a mall, man. Okay, it's usually always in a mall. So anything in a mall, they're going to jack the price up anyway. But that store, yeah, especially on DVDs, don't go there.
Yeah, I was actually in there the other day in the mall in, like, West Virginia. I know. I went in there and looked for maybe about 2 minutes, and I was like, let's get the fuck out of here. That stuff's high. You can't get nothing in there cheap. Like, the $5.50 DVDs that are at Walmart, they're in there for $15.
The only good thing I've ever seen come out of Suncoast is occasionally they'll give away free DVDs if you buy a DVD.
Yeah.
And that's where we got the lovely movie.
Near Death.
Near Death, yeah.
That's a great movie, by the way, if you don't know. But we've got off a little bit on this. But
that's a Joe Castro flick.
Suncoast, the only quality thing about Suncoast is they normally have rare DVDs in there that you won't normally even find at Best Buy. But they're still outrageous. And I'm definitely happy to see them fucking leave or whatever they're doing.
Congratulations, douches.
Yeah. See you, Suncoast, you bunch of puffies. So I got the Piranha remake on here. You already talked about that.
I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean to cut into your...
Yeah, it's going to be shitty anyway.
Anyway, one film that I'm looking forward to, even though Tarantino is semi-involved with Hostel, which, I don't know, it didn't have anything to do with the film. He just distributed it and produced it.
Right.
But is Grindhouse. I don't know if you've...
Yeah, we've talked about that a little bit a couple weeks ago.
But this is the Robert Rodriguez, Quentin Tarantino film. If you don't know who Robert Rodriguez is, from Dust Till Dawn, and he did Sin City.
Sin City is a great... It's not a horror movie. It's a great freaking movie, and everybody's seen it, so I don't know why I'm saying that. But
Rodriguez of Troublemaker Studios will be putting out the film. And so far, there's not much on the net about it yet.
It's supposed to come out, about November?
Yeah, and there's not any trailers or anything yet that I know of. But if one comes out, be sure to talk about it. But it's a highly anticipated film, and I really am looking forward to it because it's actually, in a way, Tarantino will be more involved in this than he will be in Hostel. And I would like to see how it is that Tarantino makes a horror film in any fashion. Because I have a feeling that if Kill Bill's any indication...
But another thing is, though, if he liked Hostel, he might want to make something like that.
I don't think it's possible he can make something shitty. I really don't.
Yeah, it's odd thing about Tarantino is, like, I know he was influenced by Argento and Fulci and all those Italian movies. And also, you could tell he was influenced by, you know, a lot of the Sonny Chiba-type movies from the 70s. And that's what was so cool about Kill Bill. It was kind of like a mixture of those of a horror movie and a kung fu movie. So, all right, we got more remake news. I got more from remakes.
Good.
The Fog remake DVD is set to come out this Tuesday. And get this, unrated. So we got to see the PG-13 movie in theaters, but I'll be, man. It's going to be unrated.
If they think that that's going to help sell that DVD, they're sorely mistaken.
Here's another thing, too. Since it was released theatrically, PG, wouldn't it be the R-rated version instead of unrated? Because how can you go from PG-13 to unrated? That's...
Maybe there's anal rape in the original that they took out.
Yeah, hopefully it's Tom Welling getting anally raped, too.
I don't really know, but all I can say is there's nothing in the world that could help that movie.
Nobody buy or rent this, or we will hunt you down and bitch smack you.
Yeah, seriously, don't even think about it.
No, seriously. If you liked the original Fog, you go watch that again, okay? Don't stain your mind with this piece of shit.
It's like I said before, if you're a big fan of originality or gore, then don't see this movie because it has neither. So.
Yeah, another movie though that I'm actually interested in seeing is Dante Tomaselli's Satan's Playground, and I've actually seen a 5-minute preview disc, and it's unbelievable what I saw so far. But Anchor Bay is set to release the entire movie in the summer of 2006, which is this year. Bonus features will include audio commentary, exclusive behind-the-scenes footage, trailers, stills, and a whole lot more. So I'm guessing it'll probably be about June or July when that comes out, and I'm definitely looking forward to that one.
Yeah, Felicia Rose, Ellen Sandals. That, to me, you don't get much better.
Yeah, I mean, Ellen Sandals looks better. She looks a lot better now. She looks younger now than she did in Evil Dead. I don't know how that is, what she's doing.
And
but
she actually looks better.
Yeah.
Not just younger, but
I mean,
she's aged very well.
For somebody that's almost 50 years old, jeez. And she actually looks younger than Felicia Rose, too. So.
But if anybody saw Lori Petty in the last episode of Masters of Horror, she hasn't aged that well.
That's
to say the least.
That's pretty bad, too, considering how hot she was.
And by the way, if anybody is watching the Masters before, is it me or did the last two episodes not just completely suck ass?
I didn't get to see the Lucky McKee episode.
Well, it was horrible, too.
They haven't had it on.
It was called Sick Girl.
And I still haven't seen the John Landis one, either.
I saw bits and pieces of that. I didn't see the whole thing, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm guessing they're sort of saving the, you know, the ones that aren't as good for last.
I guess that makes sense. But
Anchor Bay has announced some of their April DVDs, and I'm not sure, I don't think all of them are horror movies, but I'll go through them all. April 4th, The Anniversary, The Long Good Friday, whatever that is, Tripping the Rift Season 2, and I'm sure that ain't horror. April 11th is The Scorned. April 18th is Bad Dreams, which has been delayed numerous times.
Jennifer Rubin?
Yeah. And here's one that you'll get. Doogie Howser, MD, Season 4.
Oh, man, I've been waiting for that.
And The Killing Time, all on April 18th. And April 25th is Karis the Prophecy. So Anchor Bay's finally releasing some more horror flicks, it looks like, on DVD.
It's a shame they're mostly shitty.
More remake news. Okay. Unless you got something else to talk about.
I'm fresh out of news. Go ahead.
Okay. Damien 666.
Oh, God, no. I actually have that, yeah.
Okay.
Have you seen the pictures of the new Damien?
Yeah, the pictures of the new Damien is on deadpit.com's message board. I've got them up there. And the little bastard's creepy. He's creepy. You know, there ain't no doubt about that. But I hate kids as it is. But damn, that little bastard's creepy. Okay.
I'd like to give special props and a shout out to the casting director of that movie because he did find one creepy ass little kid.
Yeah, it is a little creepy kid. But one cool thing that I have to give him props for this, for thinking of this. This movie is going to hit theaters June 6th, 2006. Mm-hmm. Okay, which is 666. We also got the teaser poster, though, up on the message board at deadpit.com, deadpit.com. Check it out. Yes, yes. All right, here's another one for you. I know you're a big fan of Malcolm in the Middle.
I am. Frankie Muniz.
Has got a horror movie coming out called Stay Alive.
Okay. I've actually heard about that.
Yeah, after the mysterious, brutal death of an old friend, a group of teenagers find themselves in possession of Stay Alive, an ultra-realistic 3D video game based on the spine-chilling true story of a 17th century noblewoman known as the Blood Countess.
That's great.
Yeah. The gamers don't know anything about the game other than they're not supposed to have it.
So
give me that game, boy.
As if it wasn't bad enough that we have shit like Fear.com and White Noise. Now we have to have a killer video game. Is that what that's saying?
That's right.
Well, that's great. I'll tell you what.
It seems like Uwe Boll should direct that.
It does. It really does. Yeah.
Or maybe Paul Amstrand, Uwe Boll, like, you know.
Could be a joint.
What if they had, get this, I know they got a Creepshow sequel coming out, we'll talk about that a little bit later. What if they had, like, a Creepshow style, like, three-segment type of movie with all killer video games, and you'd have, like, Paul Anderson direct one, Uwe Boll direct another one, and I don't know, you could get, like, I don't know, somebody from Nintendo to direct another one. But, that would be a good idea, though.
Yeah. I mean, that seems to be what gets the people to come to the theater nowadays, so it would probably be a real smash.
Killer video games.
Yeah.
Some more remake news, sort of. Well, that is a remake. Night of the Living Dead 3D.
Yes, which we talked about.
Right. Is set to open in a limited theatrical release on March 17th. There's a 3D photo gallery on their site, which is nightoflivingdead3d.com. And you need the red and blue glasses for that. Sid Haig is in the movie from Devil's Rejects and House of Thousand Corpses. Brianna Brown, Greg Travis, who was in Mortuary. It's a new Toby Hooper movie.
I didn't see that. I heard it's really shitty.
Yeah. And the director is Jeff Broadstreet. That's right. Yeah. We'll probably not see that if it's around here.
No. That's doubtful.
It won't be around here anyway. It's probably one of those movies that'll be $5.50 in a year. The Blair Witch directors are set to return on a new horror film.
Daniel Merrick.
Eduardo Sanchez is heading back to the horror genre with another documentary type pick entitled Raw Feed, according to Variety, by the way. The movie is being aimed at a direct-to-video release from Warner Brothers. So, I don't know. I kind of like the Blair Witch after all the hype died down.
Mm-hmm. When I first saw that movie, it was a really big disappointment, but that's just because everybody had talked about it forever.
It was probably the last horror movie that everybody went crazy over, you know?
It was
an original movie.
It was a genre-defining movie.
It was. There was a lot of films that ripped that off after it came out.
I think that probably...
But
The Sixth Sense was the closest thing that came to that after that. Yeah. It has to do with horror.
Yeah. Okay, the last bit of news I have is the official Creepshow 3 website is now available at creepshow3.com. And I just sort of wanted to talk about these movies that seem to be coming out. You have Day of the Dead 2, which the same group released. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I think it's the same sort of people that directed Horror 101 and Horror 102, those movies, mm-hmm. the directed videos. And now it seems like they're just getting these movies for some reason. They have the rights to the name. And they're basically pieces of shit from what I've heard.
They take the title and they don't have any kind of budget. And they don't have any good director. They don't have anything, really. And they're just taking the rights to the name to try to capitalize on money. It's kind of like remakes, except a little bit worse. Because they're not coming out and telling you that they're...
It's unofficial sequels, pretty much. I don't understand how they actually have the rights to do that. How can they use the name? I know that for some reason I think Day of the Dead 2 was public domain name.
Well, think they're both Romero movies. Is Romero got some kind of copyright retardation or something?
I know that Night of the Living Dead is public domain.
It is.
That movie. Anybody can broadcast that movie anywhere in the world. And
because of some kind of contract.
Yeah.
They didn't sign the contract.
I'm not sure if Day of the Dead is the same way, but I'm guessing it is. I mean, how could they get the rights to it?
It seems to me like I don't think that Romero would let something like that happen because he's not a big fan of people doing it. He wasn't even a fan of the Night of the Living Dead sequel that Savini directed, so
yeah.
I don't think he would be up for that.
Anyway, Creepshow 3, I'm not looking forward to it. I'll probably never see it.
Nope, me either.
We got some screening news for people in larger cities, namely New York and Los Angeles.
Yeah, go fuck yourself.
There's a screening at Metropole NYC, which is at 332 11th Street between 1st and 2nd Avenue. And it's free admission on Monday, January 23rd. At 10 p.m., there will be showing a screening of Amityville Horror Part 2, The Possession. Free, by the way. Why can't we get that shit like that? Seriously.
Yeah, if anybody's actually listening to this show that lives around Eastern Kentucky, where we live, What the hell's wrong with you? I mean, what's wrong with this friggin' place? We can't even get midnight movies around here. I mean, we have basically...
Let's be honest. We live in Prestonsburg, Kentucky, okay? I'm giving out some personal information here.
Yeah.
There's one goddamn theater here. One.
Well, you don't have to drive 30 miles to
it. And it plays two movies, okay? And usually one of them has Ice Cube. One of the movies has Ice Cube in it. It's a comedy. And the other movie is usually some Julia Roberts, Richard Gere movie.
Yeah,
but we're stuck with this shit, okay? And listen to this. This makes me even madder. I was talking to this guy on MySpace. L.A.'s Grindhouse Film Festival is kicking off 2006 the right way with Sloppy Eye Art and Bruno Mattei Zombies. This month's pairing showing, which is going to be Tuesday, January 24th, begin at 7:30, will take place, as always, at the New Beverly Cinema, which is, here we go again, 7165 Beverly Boulevard. The double bill kicks off with Headless Eyes, a 1971 Orbit Fest gore fest, and one of our favorite, like, cheesy zombie movies, Bruno Mattei's cheese classic, Night of the Zombies, a.k.a. Hell of the Living Dead.
I'm telling you this right now, that movie, I don't give a damn what anybody says about it. Yeah, I know it ripped off Dawn of the Dead and everything. But it's a friggin' killer movie for gore, and especially for Italian gore, if you like that kind of stuff.
So. Yeah, and that the last movie, which we mentioned, will be at 9:30. So admission price for the night is just $7. And it also includes a reel of exploitation trailers and prize giveaways. So if you want more information, you can call them at 323-465-8764 or go to myspace.com/grindhouse. Now, the last screening is also in California, and it pisses me off even more. Cannibal Holocaust will have a screening on January 26th at the Parkway Speakeasy Theater in Oakland, California.
If you even mentioned a movie like Cannibal Holocaust around here, people would lose their freaking mind.
Let me tell you a little funny story, though. About Cannibal Holocaust. Lexington, Kentucky, which is the closest large city, which is about a two-hour drive from here, they have midnight movies there, okay? And a couple years ago, Sage Stallone and Grindhouse had a screening of Cannibal Holocaust there, right? Supposedly it was supposed to happen. I don't think it did because the city of Lexington held the copy up in their court and wouldn't give it back. They would. I don't know. That's just how it is around here, folks. I mean, it's just the shit that we live in. But that's the end of the horror news. And
we're going to talk about the last week's Friday the 13th show and some of the responses that we got from listeners.
Yeah, and I think we should read the poll, which is
Yeah.
So we'll be right back.
www.deadpit.com.
How do, everybody? It's me, Junior, from the Horror Newsletter. Check us out at www.horrornewsletter.com. In this month's issue, we have interviews with Barbie Wilde from Hellraiser 2, Alan Sandweiss and Tom Sullivan from The Evil Dead, and Creepshow 3 interviews with Anna Clavel and Jim Duddleson, and a special feature on the Erie Horror Film Festival. So check us out. www.horrornewsletter.com.
We're back on deadpit.com. Now, last week we had the Friday the 13th Horror Gala.
That's right.
We had interviews with Betsy Palmer and Paul Kratka and composer Harry Manfredini.
Which got rave reviews, by the way, and yeah, I appreciate everybody.
That turned out really, really well, and we got a lot of hits on the site, and we got a lot of feedback, and a lot of people emailed us and said they really loved the show. And to continue doing interviews. And
you know what, folks? All I'm going to say is Friday the 13th hits again this year.
In October.
So if we're still around, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
We might do another one.
Anyway, we're going to have old CK over here go to the poll. This is the Friday
the
13th
poll. We actually left the poll open another week since the folks at FridayThe13thFilms.com really got the people flowing that damn site. So I want everybody to vote on it. And the results changed. They varied a little bit from what we read last week. So we had a total of 113 total votes on the show. Which the first Friday the 13th was the most popular with 21% of the vote. Then you have part three, which is the second most popular, 18%. Part four is at 13. Then you have part six at 11. Part seven at 10%. And part two at 10%. They were tied at 10% each. Then our favorite movie, part five, got a whopping 5%, by God. Six votes. And Jason Takes Manhattan, Jason X, and Freddy vs. Jason all tied with 4%. And this really makes me happy because it is the worst film of the series. Mm-hmm. And nobody, out of 113 people, nobody voted for Jason Goes to Hell.
As they should not.
So let's thank the audience for that. Yeah. That movie is the worst of the series, yeah. And it didn't deserve a vote.
It really didn't, but that really kind of comes out the way I thought it would originally, with the first one being the most popular and the third one being the second.
Yeah. Well, you just had to have more people's input on it, and it changed.
But we want to thank everybody that voted, and we definitely want to thank, you know, all the people we interviewed, Harry Manfredini, Paul Crack, and Betsy Palmer.
Yeah, and hopefully we can do it again and get some more insightful guests, you know,
it seemed to
throughout
go over
the series.
Really, really well, yeah. So we'll be doing it again. Nothing's scheduled or anything. We're just tentatively saying we might do it again next Friday 13th.
Yeah, because it was fun.
Moving on, we have Scott Goldberg information.
Yeah. After last week's show, where we mentioned Danielle's Revenge to Paul Cracker, right? Mm-hmm. And he talked about a movie called The Day They Come Back, which is another movie he did with Scott Goldberg recently. So we got in contact with Scott Goldberg, and he's tentatively scheduled to give us an interview for the next episode, which will be February 3rd, which is Friday, February 3rd. And here's another thing. I want everyone to give me their feedback on the show. Do you think we should keep it as a bi-weekly show, which is once every other Friday? Or do you think we could, you know, or do you think you would listen to it every Friday if we did it once a week? Just let us know. We're talking about it right now. We're not sure if we would be able to do a show once a week, but it's just a thought. So, but as scheduled, though, Scott Goldberg will be the guest next week, and in a couple weeks, and he's wanting to discuss just basic independent horror films and, you know, a lot of the thoughts on the films that come out today. So
this has been really interesting because we've only been doing this show now for what?
About a month? Yep.
And we've got some responses from some independent film directors and some, you know, actually, you know, old school Hollywood film directors. It's amazing how much positive feedback we've gotten so far.
Yeah, we really appreciate it, too. And I guess we can go ahead and read some of the emails.
Yeah, we ask people, anybody who wanted to, if they could email in or post on the forum on www.deadpit.com.
Yeah.
And you can post your stuff, and we would read it on the air. Well, this is a fan-based site, so we're going to read all the emails.
Yeah, a couple of the emails, though, I don't want to mention, it's like a follow-up to the Friday the 13th episode that we did. Mm-hmm. We mentioned in Jason Goes to Hell, and John McDonough, I guess is how do you pronounce that?
I'm assuming it's
McDonough.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote in that actually Kane Hodder played Freddy's arm in Jason Goes to Hell. Information. It wasn't Freddy's arm, it was Kane Hodder's arm. And another one from Scab Boy. Okay. We help those scabs clear up for you. You can get the Friday the 13th 3D DVD at fleshwoundvideo.com. Okay. And to get the 3D to work, you can get the shutter glasses on eBay. So you can check that out. And he said the Friday the 13th special rocked.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate that, Scab Boy. You the man. Seriously, though. We appreciate all the email and stuff. And we actually got another email based on the Friday the 13th episode from Georgia Vossi of Gallows Hill Productions. Hello. Love the Friday the 13th interviews. I want to thank you and Paul for mentioning my husband's, who's D.T. Carney's latest film, Dust to Dust. I'm going to have him listen to the show Friday when he comes back home. And if you ever want to do an interview with him, let me know, as he loves horror. Filming for Dust begins on February 17th, and it looks to be awesome. Thanks again. Well, we would love to talk to D.T. Carney, and I'll get in contact with...
We'll definitely be doing an interview later on.
We'd love to do an interview with...
And actually talking about... I don't think you have that on there, but I actually got an email because I posted on the Friday 13th message board, and somebody said that they listened to the show and they really enjoyed it and they look forward to the next time we do a show. I didn't bring it with me, but we did get more feedback than that about the show.
All right. We got something from Dr. Mwamba.
Mm-hmm.
He reads that he checked out the Friday the 13th special. It was a little long, but very interesting. You guys asked some pretty good questions in the interviews. I especially enjoyed the Harry Manfredini interviews. He seemed like a really nice guy. Well, he was a really nice guy, and you know, I think we lucked out in getting him as one of our first interviews.
Yeah, that was probably one of the best interviews we will ever do, and definitely one of the best we ever have ever done. So.
Well, hopefully there'll be some more interviews that'll be just as good. Mm-hmm. But one of the cooler emails that we got was from James Packman in Gisborne, New Zealand.
That's right. Okay?
I thought this was really cool. Emailing you all the way from New Zealand. Just been listening to the Friday the 13th program, and it's superb. I didn't know your site existed, but it's great. Well, thanks a lot for saying that. But in response to my favorite films, Part 3, Part 5, and Part 6, those are all killer. Of course, the two are classics in their own right, too. I did an in-depth assignment on the films for a high school project. And he also mentioned something here that he made an amateur movie called A Bucket of Gore in the homage to the film, to these Friday the 13th films. And it ended up playing Amateur Film Fest for around the world, he said. So, thanks for the email, James, from New Zealand. That was pretty killer, I thought. I think we've done all the Friday the 13th feedback, okay? There was somebody that posted on our message board, and I just thought this was hilarious. Not everyone wants to hear about Sherry Moon's ass or Kelly Ray or whatever the fuck you guys think are hot at the time. More gore, less tits and ass. Well, we're going to have more gore on here for sure.
Yeah, there's always room for more gore.
But we're going to have tits and ass, too. I mean, it's not going to, that's just a fact. I mean, we like tits.
Yeah, the fact is that we'll probably always talk about tits and ass.
I know it's probably going to, the women that actually listen, thank y'all for listening and everything. I'm sure there's probably only one or two of you actually out there listening. But... I like talking about titties, and I'm just never going to stop.
You can't have a conversation about horror movies without titties. I'm sorry. It just doesn't work, because 95% of horror movies have titties in.
Yeah, we love titties.
Yeah. So thanks for the email anyway, though.
Yeah, here's one last email, though, from Steve. He says, well, I had a chance to listen to the second show. I thought it's definitely getting better than the first, but I have to disagree that Toby Hooper has more than one good film. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is definitely by far his best, but I liked Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, Poltergeist, Funhouse, and Eaten Alive is cool to see early performances from Robert Englund. Anyway, I like hearing about horror movies giving me something new to watch. Did you check out Dead and Breakfast yet? No, we haven't.
No. Sorry.
It's definitely one of my top films of 2005. It comes from Steve.
We will eventually see that movie. The thing that I said in that show was, I know I did actually say that. I said that Toby Hooper has never directed one good movie, and that was Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Right.
And by the way, I stand by that. I don't think that he directed Poltergeist for one thing. I think Steven Spielberg did, so that discounts that. I don't think Eaten Alive was that great at all. Funhouse, I liked the main monster in it, but I didn't think it was by any means a genre-defining movie. I guess the closest thing will be the sequel to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but it's a sequel to the movie I was talking about. So, it's just.
Yeah, you can have that opinion, but I mean, I did like the Funhouse. I didn't have a problem with that.
That's all I'm saying. So.
But that is all the emails that I got.
We actually got two more things on the message board.
Okay.
Where somebody asked us questions.
Right.
They actually asked us. First one being, could you recommend some slasher movies where the killer is a female? Well, I came up with a five that I could think of off the top of my head that where the killer actually turned out to be a female.
Mm-hmm.
Friday 13th.
Okay.
I'm sorry if you have seen that movie, if you've been under a rock or something, but the killer is a female.
Yeah.
April Fool's Day.
Well, April's other. Yeah, it doesn't have a killer in it, technically.
Well, yeah, but you'll see what I mean. Sleepaway Camp.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if you
Sleepaway Camp 2 and 3 would be another. Yeah,
if you haven't seen those movies, sorry, that's a spoiler. Audition, which if you like Japanese horror movies, that's right up your alley. And May, which is Lucky McGee movie, Angela Bass. Okay. All these movies have killers who are females, so that's a brief answer to your question. There's dozens more, I'm sure.
Yep.
And the second question, how about a review of Nutbag? Now, when I first read that, I thought it was a joke, but there is actually a movie called Nutbag, and it's directed by Nick.
Sounds like a classic.
It's directed by Nick Plumbo.
I want to see some Nutbag!
So,
come on!
I appreciate, you know, the thought that went into writing an email asking us,
I saw the email. That was just it. Review Nutbag?
Yeah. So, I'll give you a brief review of Nutbag. It's a movie about a serial killer that lives in Las Vegas, and it's kind of a... And it kind of rips off Maniac by William Lustig. But as much as I like to recommend horror movies, this one I don't give much credence to. But those are the two questions that we got in the forum. So.
Okay. So right now we're going to play an interview that I did with Randy Gaston of the Horror Newsletter. And we'll be right back. You know, the interview's about 10 minutes. So we'll be right back after that and a short break. We'll see you, folks. This is the Creepy Kentuckian on here with Randy Gaston of the Horror Newsletter.
Howdy, y'all.
So just, I guess you could start off by telling the listeners about yourself.
Basically, I've been watching horror movies since I was 6. Hard to believe, but that's what I've been doing. I mean, I watched everything mid-70s forward. Growing up basically at a time when The Exorcist was a popular movie. So, you know, one of my biggest things growing up is I'd watch horror movies until they're ingrained into my brain.
Yeah.
One of the fun things, of course, is I always want to learn more about it. So the only place I could ever find anything was like at a Famous Monsters, a film lab magazine, which basically, it's still in print today, but it has, very poor distribution. And then in around the 80s, when the videotapes came out, VHS, I started getting, you know, watching movies and buying movies on tape and learning them to death, like Evil Dead and Phantasm and all those good movies, you know. And moving forward, it was like the technology got better, and I think so did the magazines. Like Fangoria had a really good run there from the, I guess, the late 80s into the, you know, to the mid-90s. Just different, you know, articles and topics, but they would take a topic and beat it to death, where they would print the same thing over and over and over. Over several issues, you know, I mean, you can only think so much of it.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, some of the newer stuff today, at least you get, you know, within the independent films, you get to see a lot more. There's a lot, you know, varied topics and stuff, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it seems like the independent films, too, they also, you know, are more eager to give you information about their product and stuff like that.
I've actually seen a lot of that. And the thing is today is that with the internet, I mean, everything's wide open. You know, you could never get in contact with a lot of these people today, back then. I mean, you just didn't know where to start. A phone book only gave so much away. And now today, I mean, there's websites and there's these search engines that have these great places where to pick up just general, you know, personal information. And, you know, if you use it wisely and use it right, you can pretty much get in touch with anybody.
Yep, that's true. So, what got you into making originally, which was deadflix.com, but is now the Horror Newsletter?
Deadflix.com was kind of a bet I had with a friend of mine, Blade. What I was doing, one of the things that we were doing is, I was a big horror fan. And I always told him, I said, I bet you I could get a website together that would be pretty decent. And he was like, you know, he knew I knew my horror pretty much better than anybody. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to one of your commercials, I often allude to the fact that about the Dawn of the Dead. Dawn of the Dead, one of the things I always said about horror movies is, you know, Dawn of the Dead, if you go on RottenTomatoes.com, is the only horror film that has 100 rating. There's no other film on there that has 100% rating that's a horror film.
Yep.
And Dawn of the Dead is it. So everything else we ever say, we always have this punchline that says, yeah, but it's no Dawn of the Dead, because there's no other film that's got that kind of rating, and it's a horror movie, you know?
Yeah, I know.
One of the days we made a bet, and I said, you know what, I bet you I can come up with a website, because I've done websites since 97. I bet you I can make a website that people will like. And so I started it out, and I just looked around, and I wanted to do a Phantasm type of site, because I love Phantasm. Yeah. And I used to talk with John Kleiser, who was actually the runner of the Phantasm website at the time. I think it was called Phantasm's End. And then they recently switched it.
That's right.
And what happened was, talking with him, he had said something to me about, he said, I dare you to push the fence. I dare you to bring down the marker and make your site the best site it can be. And I kind of took it to task. And I said, okay, you know, what the hell I got to lose? So I started small. I went to the small folks. And I just started going to, like, independent movie makers and the Frogs and all these other type of small movies. And realized I had real good success. I could ask, you know, an intelligent question and usually get an intelligent answer.
Right, yep.
So the next piece was, of course, I said I started shooting for bigger stars, and I started getting them. And it was like, wow, you know, all I needed was a good professional, you know, coming into it, and everything else would go well.
You mentioned Dawn of the Dead before, and the funny thing about Dawn of the Dead, the original Dawn of the Dead, is if it had never been made, there were probably a good 15 to 20 Italian zombie movies that wouldn't be out there.
And
it's another one that's influenced me and Uncle Bill, too, so it's one of the best, not only zombie movies, but movies in general.
Alright, well, like I said, the other thing about, I've said before about this, about many movies, the 70s was the best. You had to look at it in this term. You know, you had Jaws, you had Dawn of the Dead, you had The Exorcist, you had Phantasm, you had Halloween.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre,
exactly. Excuse me. Aliens, you know, you had films.
Harry.
Right. Films that never, ever, ever could be done again like today. Right. It's because of shock value and that people really never saw what it was worth. I mean, people never understood the pure, like, gross factor that these films had brought. And what also did is it desensitized America, because then once that happened, it was always push the buck further. You know, let's make movies even more gross, you know, and make them even worse, just in the name of trying to do something different. But none of them had the psychosis of these other films. None of them.
You mentioned, though, none of them could be made today, but it seems like all of them are getting remade, you know, eventually.
Well, you guys got ad nauseum on this one. I think I have, too. I've written about it extensively. And the latest issue of the Hard Newsletter, I've written about franchise players, where basically that's what's happening. You have franchise people that are basically just putting films out in the name of Social Security. You know, these guys are looking to pad their pockets before they retire. There's no real value to bring another Texas Chainsaw Massacre out. There's no real value to redoing the old. I can't see it. You know, that's what made those films classics. That's what made them timeless. You know, just bringing them out because you can't come up with something original is not good by me anyway.
Yeah. I think probably the only one that's safe may be Jaws, just because of Spielberg. But other than that, I can see all of those films being remade at some point. But
well, Jaws and The Exorcist, I don't think they can redo properly.
I can see The Exorcist, though. I really can.
The problem is that you had to realize The Exorcist was shot in the 70s. When nothing like it ever had come out before. And you had to realize that it crossed the boundary of religion and personal belief, and that is why it was so strong. Do you remember when the film The Last Temptation, what's the latest iteration, The Passion of Christ came out just recently?
Yeah.
And people were, like, passing out and dying in the theater. That had that type of psychosis that Mel Gibson elicited with Passion of Christ. That's what The Exorcist had. When The Exorcist came out, it had the psychosis of America. People were throwing up watching this film. People were scared, you know, to death to watch this movie. I mean, you tell me another film that had that kind of draw. You know, and how can they even try to create that again? Is it possible?
Yeah, it would just be really a cheap, modernized version of that. You know, it probably wouldn't have any sort of, you know, fuck me, or whatever.
No redeeming value, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to get a kid to say that nowadays. It's just not going to happen.
Well, again, it's not going to be scary. It's not going to have the same shock value as that one did. Again, that's what it all comes down to. When it came out, it was shocking. Nobody's ever done it.
Yeah.
Now everything's pretty much been done. I mean, if you think about it, that's the reason why you're seeing these classics remade. Because they can't come up with new stuff. They'll pop it, you know?
That's true.
A lot of this stuff, like, my core belief with this newsletter is the following. I ask stuff as a sick. I've seen thousands of films, and I could at least go and I could watch a movie subjectively and say, okay, here's what's good about the movie. Here's what I like about it. Why don't you tell me about more about it? Tell me, you know, I'll ask the questions that maybe nobody else might. I'll ask about the minutia. I'll ask about, where'd you come up with this? Well, why'd you say that? And it seems like all the other magazines sort of miss that. They don't go for that extra little piece. And I hope I get some people, or some readers that really sort of, you know, understand that. And that's what I'm shooting for.
Yeah. One of the things, too, I noticed about the newsletter is it focuses a lot on the independent scene.
That's our bread and butter. That's our future right there.
Yeah.
I love those guys.
You know, like Dante Tomaselli. And,
yeah, he's a great guy. Like I said, I talked to a lot of these folks, and I've come to relationships with several of them, just understanding and knowing that there's people. And what's really cool is that a lot of these folks, Dante Tomaselli, James McKinney, are two of my favorites. These guys, they're just so smart, and they're so brilliant about how they approach these films.
And they're fans, too, right?
They have great fans. And they're big fans, and you know, I think that's why I appreciate it so much, is that they can be subjective about what they talk about and still remain core to the principle of the genre. And very few people do. I mean, Dante in Satan's Playground, if you've seen that film or even seen the trailers for that film.
I saw the preview in it as well.
Yeah, he does such an amazing job of in the wood sequence where, I mean, you actually feel like you're the monster trio tracking Phyllis and Rose down. That's amazing. I mean, Just this camera work is sensational.
Yeah.
And I think he's probably going to be the jewel of the rough. He's the up-and-coming guy. I think he could possibly be the person that does the next Evil Dead film.
That's true.
They're still talking about the next Evil Dead film. And now Sam Raimi just announced the new movie he's doing, and it's not the next Evil Dead movie. So, I mean, it's, you know, you can't wait around for it to come. You just have to kind of hope something else good comes along. While that film is being made, so
yeah. Satan's Playground did have an Evil Dead feel to it, from what I saw. You know, I saw a 5-minute preview of it, but
the movie stars, of course, Elvin Sandvies, who plays, you know, Cheryl, Ash's sister in the film, and
it's amazing how young she looks in that film. I was surprised.
She really does it. Like I said, I'm not sure exactly. From what I've seen of it, again, since it really didn't have a theatrical release, it's only going to be released by Anchor Bay in a couple of weeks here. It would really be cool to kind of see, you know, this is a 70s, 80s film. This isn't a contemporary, I believe. I think this is an older film. And I mean, she really holds up very well. So does Melissa Rose. I mean, she does great.
Yeah.
And, you know, these are two great actresses, or actors, as we would call them. And, you know, having the fun now. These guys are having fun doing it. You know, there's no pressure.
Yeah. Well, I guess we just tell everyone to check out the latest issue of the Horror Newsletter. And just tell us what's in it if you want to.
Bobby Wild, who's the female setup in this issue, actually explained some of her background. And she's a great person to chat with. And she just has a lot of information about, you know, her playing the role and her getting in the makeup. And just a lot about where she came from. And, of course, I also spoke with the folks from the Erie Horror Fest, Greg Rupp, and he has an incredible background. And the show they're going to put on in October, if anybody out there is looking to move a film or to basically show a film to people, you should check out ErieHorrorFest.com.
I understand George Romero is going to be there, too.
George Romero will be this year's guest. And like I said, if you go to the newsletter, you can definitely see previous year's guests, which were Gunnar Hansen and Lloyd Kaufman, as well as Debbie Rochon.
Mm-hmm.
Another part of our newsletter is, of course, that we received some new footage and some photos from Tom Sullivan from The Evil Dead, for a movie called The Dread, which is actually looks pretty good as well. I've done some graphic work from that. I got some stuff from ShorelineEntertainment.com. Who also has some pictures up there for you guys to take a look at.
Okay.
There's just so much killer information coming out, and it's hard to keep up with everything. But, you know, we're just doing the best we can with, you know, what we got coming to us. So.
Yeah, so everyone check that out at www.horrornewsletter.com.
And just let everybody know that Creepy Kentucky and Uncle Bill are main contributors to the Dead Pit. which is a segment within the newsletter. It's usually about four pages long. It usually features one DVD review. And these guys are great. I've been working with these guys for four issues now, and they've been just a pleasure to work with. And I appreciate you guys' help. And you've both been very cool. And I appreciate it more than anything else.
Well, we definitely appreciate all the help that you gave us too.
Keep it rolling. Yep. So be good, man.
Okay.
Keep it shiny. Take it easy.
Okay, we're back on deadpit.com. I'm a creepy Kentuckian.
I'm Uncle Bill.
And the next little thing I want to talk about, it's not going to take too long, but it's, you know, we was talking about Fangoria earlier, and they're sort of dropping their magazine from Suncoast stores, right? I wanted to do a small segment on horror publications in general, horror magazines, and how they can still exist in an internet-based society now when all the information comes out so quickly. The thing about Fangoria is, back in the day, I know we talk about back in the day a lot on this show, but it was a lot better source to find out, you know, whatever you needed from horror films or whatever. Whereas today, it's more of, you know, it's everything is just based on on-location pictures, interviews, stuff like that. And you don't really get any sort of news source from the magazines anymore. And it seems like most of the Fangoria magazines that are out now have the majority of advertising and things like that. And I don't understand why somebody would pay $8, $9 for a magazine that includes 40 or 50% advertising.
Well, I have a couple of different problems with Fangoria, but the first probably being the price, which is upwards of $8, so I'm not going to buy it.
I want to say, too, though, you get all those Fangoria magazines from the 80s and early 90s, those things are great. I don't have a problem. I don't really have a problem with Fangoria because I don't buy it. I'm not going to spend my money on it now. Yeah. But the old issues are great, and there's nothing like them. Because it brings you back to that classic time, you know.
Well, you basically said it before. The internet killed any news worthiness that magazine ever had. Because now you can get the news, you know, even quicker.
But I want to give you a couple of underground magazines that are out there. And the first one I want to mention is Penny Blood Magazine, okay? I think they come out with about four issues a year. And, you know, they price about $6 an issue. And it's the issue that I have in front of me right now has, you know, interviews with Roger Corman in it, David Cronenberg, Robert Englund, people like that. And it's more along the lines of Fangoria, sort of. But you have less advertising and more content. And that's the main reason I like that magazine. I mean, I've looked through it briefly, and I can tell you that the quality is top-notch. I mean, it's a black and white, glossy pages with color cover. You don't have, you know, all glossy like Fangoria and Rue Morgue and stuff like that.
And the magazine, see, since you can't do the news thing anymore, and people need to realize that, especially Fangoria, the magazine's mostly interviews. And it's really good interviews and in-detail interviews, and they got some good pics in there from old, you know, classic horror films.
So I thought it was cool to see a David Cronenberg interview, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next batch of magazines, it's actually the last batch of magazines I have to talk about, is I actually have two copies of Ultra Violent, which delves into the horror and exploitation part, you know.
You got to talk about the covers now.
The covers of these magazines are badass. Like, you have, they're fucking gory as hell, you know.
If you remember,
I mean, look at.
Yeah, if you remember what Fangoria did in the 80s before, you know, it got to be.
Well, it's even beyond that.
Yeah,
though.
I was going to say, it's even more graphic than that.
We have issue 6 and issue 7. I can tell you that these issues include interviews with Don Edmonds, who did all of those Ilsa movies that we love so much.
Mm-hmm.
It has an interview with Ruggero Deodato, I guess that's how you pronounce it, from Cannibal Holocaust and Jungle Holocaust, from House on the Edge of Park, stuff like that. And you also have an interview, I don't know how they found this guy, Hadishi Hiro from Guinea Pig, director of Guinea Pig movies. They've interviewed.
He also starred
that.
In one of those Guinea Pig movies.
Terry Lofton, director of Nail Gun Massacre and stuff like this. So these magazines are completely, you know, different than Fangoria. You're going to find people. I can guarantee you, Fangoria, they're not going to even go near the guy that directed Guinea Pig. Trust me.
No.
So if you want to pick up magazines and not be out $8, pick up an issue of Ultra Violent or Penny Blood magazine. Flat out. They're killer magazines. And also, as mentioned before, you know, on the internet, there are plenty of outlets too. And I actually think Fangoria's website is better than their magazine is right now.
Yeah, and that's a sad commentary on that magazine. But it is, yeah, the website is a lot better than the magazine. And I was just looking at these magazines, the Ultra Violent one especially. The format they have is not that complex, but it's one that, you know, it has a lot of information in it, a lot of good interviews, and that's all you need. You don't need, you know, 15, 20 pages full of advertising.
It's the style of magazine that I like. If I was making a magazine, I'd want to make one like that.
All substance, no style. That's basically what it is.
Well, the style is kind of, you know, it's underground. It doesn't have, it's not a high
budget.
What
I mean is there's no glossy,
matte
paper.
And another thing that's like Fangoria is Rue Morgue. Okay, that's another $8 magazine. You buy it. I could have bought a copy to talk about on this show, but I don't want to spend that kind of money on a magazine that's full of ads. Flat out. And that's the thing about these magazines, though. Aside from Fangoria, you hardly have any ads, any break in the content. It's all content, like we said before. So go out and buy copies of these if you're a fan of real horror movies. You don't want to read like articles on Cry Wolf. Host or something like that. I don't want to see that. I mean,
that's the main problem with that stuff is that it picks most Hollywood movies and mainstream horror movies. And I just hate to tell people, but there's not any mainstream horror movies worth shit anymore. So you're just gonna have to.
That's true. So I guess we're gonna talk about some of the DVDs.
Now it's time for the reviews section.
Not only just DVDs, but movies in general. Because there's a couple that we got here.
Remember, folks, this is a public service for you.
That aren't available on DVD. There's a couple we've got that's not out yet. So let's start with that. Talk about one of those movies. How about let's start out with House of Carnage.
Oh, okay. Fourth Floor Pictures. If you don't know what Fourth Floor Pictures is, it's a small little independent offshoot of Sub Rosa Studios.
Yep. We and talk about Sub Rosa a lot on here.
Yeah, because Sub Rosa's killer. That's all I'm saying. House of Carnage, to put it lightly, is somewhat of a homage to the Texas Chainsaw movies.
Oh, it's a ripoff.
Yeah, I can't even say that.
Okay. The cool thing about House of Carnage is, and this is the thing that I'll always remember, the killer in it, okay? He's also got a tater sack on his head, doesn't he?
He does.
That seems to happen a lot in these Sub Rosa movies, too. But the cool thing that he does is he only, like, most of the time, doesn't he just kill women?
Yeah, there's only women in the movie.
And he has women tied up, right?
With a chain down on the hook.
Yeah. Before he kills them, he jerks their clothes off, and you can see their titties.
Yeah.
I said titties.
He did say titties.
Yeah. And he does that with at least five or six different women.
That's basically that's the plot. If there was a plot to this movie, besides completely ripping off Texas Chainsaw Massacre, it would be expose the breast and hit somebody over the head with a hammer.
Right.
That's basically.
And then you see the Bill Moseley guy.
Yeah, the Chop Top guy. The guy that plays Chop Top's character in that movie, he probably does have one of the most accurate impersonations I've ever seen.
He did do a really good job in that movie.
But, it's a good movie for gore, and it's good for a laugh, but it really rips the shit out of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah. No, who did you say the director was?
Ryan Cavallini.
Okay. Yeah, he's a young director that's only got a couple movies on his belt, and those two aren't even available anywhere yet. So, we got another one we didn't mention. I said those two. But I got one here from The Asylum, which is another one of our favorite studios. We both watched this movie, Hide and Creep.
Yes. This is a great movie for people. If you liked, Shaun of the Dead, or if you liked even, like, maybe Dead Alive, it kind of has the same kind of dark humor in it.
Yeah. The thing about Hide and Creep. It's set in the South, okay? So you're going to hear people that talk like us, right?
Exactly.
Kill like zombies, us, right? Okay? And they got cool little jokes in the movie, like, you know, NASCAR jokes or football jokes. And I'll tell you the perfect way to describe it, at least to me, is I was telling somebody last night, it's kind of like if Kevin Smith did Clerks in the South and it was a zombie movie.
Mm-hmm. If you like that description.
There's a lot of, you know, humor in the movie itself. And I love movies like that. And I thought this was actually one of the better Asylum movies that I've ever seen.
It probably was the best Asylum movie that I've seen.
Yeah.
And we've got quite a few of them.
I would definitely recommend it. Any zombie fan will definitely want this.
It's very hard unless you're bold to screw up a zombie movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, this was a really, really good movie.
And the thing is, too, though, there's not a whole lot of gore effects in it, but when they do use them, it's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's one scene where they blow a guy's head off and I guess they did it with CG, right? You remember the scene? Where it sort of splits his head. And it's a really cool scene.
Yeah, it's actually better than the CG in the Fog remake. So.
Yeah. But definitely go out and get Hide and Creep. It gets our Golden Ethel Award, by the way.
It does. The Carol Locatell Special.
Yeah. So the final movie that we're going to talk about, what would be?
Well, I figure we would talk about Dead Body Man.
Dead Body Man 2.
Dead Body Man 2, Electric Boogaloo. That's another Fourth Floor Pictures.
Ryan Cavallini movie, too.
Ryan Cavallini movie. He did the first Dead Body Man, if you've ever seen the first. And this is completely different. This is not as much a straight-out horror movie as it is, I guess it would be, what, sexploitation, if there was such a thing?
I suppose so, yeah.
There's a lot of necrophilia.
If we tell you the story of this, too, it's fucked up. It's long lines of trauma, really.
It is, yeah. It's kind of like...
You have a guy that's sent from heaven, right? Is he sent from heaven?
I don't know if he's sent from heaven, but he talks to Jesus personally.
Yeah, and Jesus, or is it God?
No, it's Jesus.
Okay. Jesus is a porno star that comes, like, he wants to watch porn. That's all he wants to do, the character, Dead Body Man. And the porn star in the film is always talking to him through the porn. So, and she wants him to kill people, or he doesn't get to watch porn. So
there's your plot right there.
He has to kill people so he can watch his porn. He wants to watch porn. So that's the whole motivation behind it.
There's a scene in this movie that I couldn't help but laugh my ass off at, where he actually has a conversation with Jesus while Jesus is smoking a joint.
Yeah.
That's just the kind of stuff that's in this movie. And there's a scene where he beats the shit out of Santa Claus. I think there's a couple other scenes that just really defy explanation.
Yeah, somebody was on some serious drugs while they were making this movie. I'll just say that.
But
it's one of those movies that was so stupid, it's fucking great.
Yeah, you have to love it.
Yeah. But that sort of ends the DVD or movie reviews, doesn't it? Do you have anything else?
Well, the other thing I can think of is The Masters of Horses, which we pretty much already talked about. But
yeah.
If you haven't seen the last two episodes, you really didn't miss anything. And so I guess that would be it.
Yeah, so that's the end of the show tonight, actually. And next week, or February 3rd is when we're going to be back. I should stop saying next week, confusing some people. February 3rd, we will be back with Scott Goldberg as our guest, and he's going to talk about, you know, everything that he's doing and, you know, what he thinks about the horror genre in general today. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back February 3rd. And I am the Creepy Kentuckian.
I'm Uncle Bill.
And we'll see you in theaters.